From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 14th day of February 2019. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Michelle Wunder will join us from the Organics Conference. It's taking place right now, in fact, at the iHotel right here in Urbana-Champaign. She'll discuss nitrogen and organic matter across the state and what difference both of those things make. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, and discuss the cash grain markets with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds, agmarket.net, right here on Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to look at what happened in Chicago for the corn, the soybeans, and the wheat, livestock as well today. Hey, Dan, thanks so much for being with us. Interesting day in Chicago. I think just some reaction mostly, although there must have been something else going on because I don't know exactly why the wheat was lower. But at least in the soybeans, to the idea that the president is planning on maybe kicking the can down the road another 60 days or so, potentially, for the deal with China. What did you make of it all?
Well, I think that has to be probably the main contributor to today's sell-off. I mean, that's what the news wires were talking about, is that there's still a lot of distance between China and the United States as far as any agreement goes. But that's just, you know, noise. We don't know. I mean, they could come to an agreement fairly quick, or it could be much longer. But when the trade hears news like that, they're, you know, a long ways apart, you know, that kind of right away sets the stages that anybody that was expecting to hear some kind of trade announcement, you know, fairly soon here within the week or 10 days, they pretty well pitched their long position. And that maybe gave the bears a little more ammunition to kind of press the downside. For the most part, corn still stays in, you know, its sideways trading range. It's been in basically, you know, since middle December. You could maybe even say, you know, all fall. But when you kind of tighten it up, we've been in a 10-cent trading range or so, and we continue to be there. We're just closer to the bottom end of that 10-cent trading range than we were at the upper end of the trading range. So it still continues in a sideways trend. The soybeans came down to their uptrend line, drawn off of that late August low and several other lows. So technically, it's going to be important for soybeans to kind of hold today's low and try to find some support here and try to bounce out of it. Or otherwise, we could see some downside follow through that would bust that trend line, and that would probably create a lot of technical selling. Technician types would view that as a trend shift then to something more sideways to lower, rather than we've kind of been in a sideways to higher type trend. So, I mean, those are the two deals. The export numbers are still delayed. I think we're just up to the Christmas level, so we don't really know what happened during January and February yet. But those export numbers in wheat, I don't think the wheat number was very good. I think all numbers were kind of disappointing. So the whole complex, you know, kind of fell under the weight of poor export demand numbers. They all kind of came in underneath the trade expectations. And actually, in soybeans case, we actually took a step backwards with a big China soybean sales cancellation. So I think today's market was pretty well lack of demand or demand worries, and no real optimistic tone on any kind of trade deal anytime soon.
Are you worried at all at this point about weather, either in South America or North America?
Well, from what I can read in between the lines, I don't think South America is in any great trouble. Actually, I think the trade kind of views the current weather pattern as somewhat favorable. As far as the U.S. goes, no, I can't worry about it yet. You know, you really can't worry about it until you get down the road a ways, I suppose, in the middle April. Then maybe a guy could maybe begin to worry if we had some adversities spring planting. But, you know, we do have a late Easter this year, and late Easter, late spring, early Easter, early spring. That's been about as good a sign as I've seen over the past 40 years. So it wouldn't surprise me that we're in for a late type spring. We got a lot of snow on the ground. We got a lot of moisture. And we're definitely going to need some warming temperatures as we, you know, move into late March if we're going to try to get into the field during April.
Informa released its estimates of the acreage figures for corn and soybeans today. They're expecting about 91.5 million acres of corn and around, 86 million acres of soybeans. What do your numbers look like?
Well, if you look at the corn-soybean ratio, it really doesn't favor one over the other in a macro basis. But now it probably does, you know, maybe it does favor corn in some of the areas that have better soil types. And that's maybe what you're seeing is people going to go with the corn with the higher yields versus the beans. But I don't have really any, you know, hard evidence to say that number's, you know, not in the ballpark. I think generally speaking, when you look at the supply demand table, you would say that maybe corn has the biggest potential of a rally if some kind of weather market would come into play this year, whereas soybeans has the carryover is so huge that it would take a significant weather problem in the soybean complex to make the soybean market move. So I suppose from a farmer's point of view, they're looking at the balance sheets and say corn might have the greatest opportunity for some kind of rally as we go on into spring, especially if we're maybe in a late spring. But again, farmers can change their minds. I mean, these are all estimates. The real estimate is what kind of weather conditions we have probably in the Midwest starting April 15th and whether or not there's any kind of tractor movement, any people out into the field. But I go along with the general trend that I would expect to see a little more corn acres, maybe a little less bean acres. But whatever it is, we're going to plant too many. And like I said last, you know, on commodity week here a week ago or so, my greatest fear in this marketplace is if we have another big crop. Because if we have another big crop, that corn carryover is going to grow to a point, and soybeans will be super, super big. Wheat's already there. I mean, you already got wheat at a billion. You got soybeans technically at a billion. And if you would happen to push corn up to 2.5 billion, then you've got we could go back to pre-ethanol prices, go back to the 2005, 2006 levels. That's my greatest fear is if we have another crop, another big crop, we're going to see much lower prices than what we've seen in over 10 years.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us for the day.
Okay, very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Don't forget, you can join us over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, March the 5th for our 29th annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. We'll have a dozen of our regular analysts with us. The cost is just $30. Buy your tickets right now at 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org. Scroll down and you'll find a link to buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. We're just a couple of weeks out now. Get your tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. One quick news item before we move on for the afternoon. This one coming from Politico that President Trump is expected to sign the bipartisan spending deal. However, Senator McConnell says that he will also at the same time be issuing a national emergency declaration for the southern border. I'm sure NPR News will have more about that, as well as other newscasts later in the afternoon. Well, this morning I spent some time at the Organic Conference at the iHotel here in Urbana-Champaign. We're now joined by Michelle Wander. She works with nitrogen on campus. Oftentimes we talk to Emerson. Maybe you hear Fred's name from time to time, but Michelle works for nitrogen as well and has kind of a unique take on nitrogen application. And I think as conventional farmers, you might find this of pretty good interest. You hear oftentimes, and Emerson was on earlier talking about, well, what nitrogen rate might we want to use? And if you use the MRTN, that's the nitrogen rate calculator. If you search for it, NRATE calculator, you'll find it. It's an Iowa State site. And for the upper two-thirds of Illinois, it mostly says put 180 pounds on. That's kind of a blanket rate, but you need to check your own logistics in it. You can put in the cost of your nitrogen and what your target yield is, and it'll give you an optimized rate for your farm. So try that first. Oh, and that rate also, by the way, includes the fall fertilizer, so don't forget to subtract that out, especially because a lot of you have not put nitrogen on because the fall was so wet. However, Michelle Wanderer has some unique thoughts about this, and they come from the organic side a little bit, but boy, it's an interesting idea and thought as to some of the externalities of nitrogen application. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So what we were trying to share today was probably like the calculator, but it is basically a full process model behind an app working with the University of Vermont, with the assumption that farmers are basically guessing. And so these calculators with rates that are based on big averages and yield targets are really conservative in the sense of they're trying to make sure people get their yield if the weather is optimal. And so they aren't considering losses. And so what our kind of outreach hypothesis is that we can let farmers actually see risk and how the application of fall nitrogen or anhydrous ammonia, which goes really fast, lines up with typical weather or wet weather years and how likely they are to lose it, and then also see how much nitrous oxide they might be putting out, which, you know, denitrification could be all the way to N2, which would be desirable from an environment that's inert. It's costly and wasteful from your pocketbook, but a lot of N2 comes out from ag soils. They're the biggest component for ag's portfolio for greenhouse gas emissions, and we're going to get tighter and tighter, and, you know, it's a problem we need to fix. So we're letting people try to visualize that and then also visualize nitrogen that's leached, which we all know about that from the goals being set from nutrient loss reduction. What you might not know is that this is a double whammy, because the nitrate that gets leached not only is a water quality problem, but that ends up a lot of it getting turned into N2O as well. So our calculator, and if we put that in line, and this fits well with the organic sector, and also people wouldn't associate me with nitrogen, they'd associate me with managing organic matter. And that's really what we have to help farmers figure out, how to rely on nitrogen supplied by their crops. Or I would add, the important thing that managing your soils for soil health, and that's in the news now, is if you have your soil in good shape and it holds a lot of water, your roots and your rooting depth and the available rhizosphere depth that the soil is going to exploit is bigger, and so the end that is there is going to be captured. And if you're managing your nitrogen and cycling it through things like cover crops or, you know, green manures, these kinds of things, that keeps the N available, so you have to put less on. So your whole banking strategy is different if you're relying on the soil to supply it, but that is so uncertain. So kind of our theme was, you know, managing the known knowns, managing the known unknowns, and then there are these, what we assume for a lot of people, the unknown unknowns, you know. So I think the calculators we have make sense for people with just economics on yield. If we put money into the environment, or we look at the cost for cleaning up water for Lake Decatur, or we look at what happened up in Iowa, you know, so really the costs that they were putting to clean the nitrate out of the water district, those costs are going to get factored in somewhere. right?
Yeah, so if you find this somewhat of interest, you can find this app, relatively speaking, either in the App Store or on iTunes. I assume it's probably on Google, too. But you can find it online.
It's in beta yet.
It's very beta. So it's just online at gocrop.org or com.
Yeah. Give us a month or two, but nag us, and then we'll get the developer, we'll get it out to you.
Okay. So, so it's in beta. It's coming. It'll be GoCrop is kind of the tagline you're going to want to look for. Organic matter. As happens, I just saw in the last 24 hours somebody had requested an organic matter soils map for the state of Illinois, which I had never seen before, and realized that where we stand today is a really, in the state, a high organic matter area, but it fades really quickly across the rest of the state. What difference does it make?
Oh, it matters a lot in terms of water holding and end supply, and just basically your productivity, your yield threshold. You could really think about. Although, that's really, if people are really putting on the fertility right, they're achieving great yields on some of our low organic matter soils too. It's just they've got to be more precise with the timing to get it right and not be more exposed to leaching losses. And in terms of thinking about your end supply potential, you could, and like a simple calculator would just take your organic matter content and assume a certain percent, like from 2 to 5% is mineralized, right? But we don't want to be drawing that down because of all the climate change, carbon sequestration kinds of goals is that you need to be renewing it and restoring it. And so some simple calculators that like ours too, you can see that whether you're in balance or not.
So the lowest organic matter areas in the state happen to correlate with southern Illinois, where they also have warmer climates and they don't put anhydrous on in the fall or not supposed to.
But they also have a lot more grass cover.
Yeah. So you said that they have to be more careful about when they apply. What does that mean?
Yeah. That means thinking about aligning when your nitrogen is going to be in its most available forms with when your crop is actively there growing it. So that's where we see the ideas of precision agriculture and precision conservation being really, you can see where people often have innovated. These are places where they've got soils that are more vulnerable, right? Our soils up here are like tolerant where they don't show signs of misuse as readily, right? So that where you really see signs of erosion, you really see signs of crusting, where you really see signs of compaction, where you've got to build those soils up. And you can benefit by use those cover crops. I think that's a really good fit. People have to do a little extra work. But, I think as we move to seeing those externalities and also thinking about risk management, they're going to pay as we get more and more excessive water in the fall and the spring, where we want rapid water entry, and then we want to enhance water holding in the midsummer when we get drought stress. So that's organic matter, not nitrogen.
All right, so organic matter, and as the climate has changed, you know that those rainstorms come, and you're probably getting as much rainfall, at least that's what the data says throughout the season. They're just coming in much larger doses through the year. So organic matter, cover crops, they'll make a difference. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thanks.
Michelle Wanderer is with the University of Illinois. I caught up with her at the Organic Crops Conference right here in Champaign-Urbana earlier today. Well, on this Thursday afternoon, a quick reminder that you should visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can sign up for the all-day agricultural outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That is the fifth day of March. It's not very far away, and the cost is just $30. Take time right now, and you can sign up at 800-898-1065 if you make a phone call, or at willag.org. You can choose how many tickets you want to buy, and it's really quick and simple and easy to do. But don't wait, because the all-day ag outlook will be upon us before you know it. Plan to be there. It's a great way to get yourself set for the marketing year that is upon us right now for the 2019 crop, the all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We're now joined by Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to talk about the cash grain side of the market. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we have some interesting things. In the cash market, the basis has begun to tighten up a little bit, though the futures have been trading off mostly the Twitter account that belongs to the president. How do you see things developing over the next week or 2 weeks?
Well, I think, you know, obviously we've got to kind of see what is going to happen here. Last week, I guess everyone was a little bit, a few days ago, everybody was a little bit more excited because we're getting very close to an agreement. We might have to push March 1st back a little bit. And then, you know, here this morning we see something more along the lines of, we might be a little farther off than what we think, you know, a little bit of leaking from the trade delegation that got a little ways to go. I know there's some hesitancy from the Chinese on, admitting or wanting to change as far as the intellectual property rights theft is concerned. And so, I think they've still got a ways to go, but the market's going to be watching that very closely because, as far as South America is concerned, I don't think there's a huge story there. You know, Argentina's got a good sized crop. In Brazil have been hurt somewhat, but you're still looking at overall larger bean and corn crop than last year, most likely.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenura is now here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. Let's start in South America where the soybean crop is being harvested. The corn crop, second crop corn, that is being planted at this point. And in Argentina, they're about halfway through their growing season. Where would you like to start today?
Well, let's start with Brazil. Brazil has been the action center of the agricultural world over the last several months, and that's because it hasn't been raining very much. We still have a drought in place, even though it did rain a bit over the last week. The big uncertainty regards what's going to happen next. We can see that a number of cool fronts will move to the north through Brazil over the next week or so, and that's going to produce quite a bit of rain. So a pattern change is essentially beginning in Brazil, and we expect that to continue. Now, what it means is a bit uncertain. For soybeans, it most likely doesn't mean a whole lot because, as you noted, they're harvesting now, so this rain is coming in a little bit late for a lot of that crop. For the second crop corn, it's a little bit of a better situation simply because we just started planting there, so this rain coming up is fairly well-timed for that crop, but keep in mind, we have to wait until March and April, really, to have a good idea, because that's similar to our July and August for their corn crop.
And in Argentina?
Well, in Argentina, it's been wet for the entire growing season until about the last week or so. It has dried out a little bit there, and we're starting to see that show up on some of our dryness charts. Now, all of that said, we aren't too worried about it because it has been pretty wet leading into this period, and we do have a fairly strong cold front that will move through in about a week from now, and that should produce some additional rainfall. As long as we see that rain in 7 to 10 days in Argentina, that should negate the potential for any dryness problems.
And then let's talk about back here at home, where today it's just beautiful sunshine and 50 degrees for the day. Though I suspect it's not going to stay that way.
Well, you really need to enjoy today because this is not going to last. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like much in the way of warm weather is coming up for a while. We can look at a number of computer models and come to the same conclusion, which is that the last half of February is going to be much colder than normal, and it might even last into March. The coldest air mass, though, as you noted, will primarily be from the Mississippi River and points to the west, so especially in those cattle and wheat areas of the plains. That's where the coldest air mass this time is going to set up. Now, all of us will be colder than normal, so this is a little unusual at any time of the year, and we're going to see it in one of the colder climatological periods of the year. So because of that, it is going to be chilly here for a while. And keep this in mind, Todd. This is an El Nino winter, and notice it's not warm. A lot of the times when we start thinking about El Nino, everyone starts talking about how it'll be a mild winter, and that certainly was a discussion back in the fall. But look at it now. Today's warm, yes, but as a whole, it has not been very warm lately, and it's not going to stay warm going forward.
Is there a reason there's a colder pattern with the El Nino this year?
Well, I think the primary reason would be that the El Nino has been fairly weak. Generally, weather in the United States, and in any area of the world for that matter, generally correlates to the El Nino when the event is strong. this event has been weak. And what we say, and when we say that, what we mean is that water temperatures out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean were only a tiny bit warmer than normal. And that's why the impacts have not been as expected. If we were in a situation like we were 3 years ago, where we had a very strong El Nino in place, well, that type of event generally correlates to weather, not only in the United States, but in Argentina, in Australia, in Brazil. All these different areas of the world generally are correlated to strong events, not weak events. And that's why we always try to remind everybody that every El Nino is not created equal.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd. Talk to you soon.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.